must almost be a relief for hockey fans in Minneapolis. Norm Green is moving the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas.
Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs!
What you wanna say? Club in fair territory and then lands fair. Wow.
So a huge break for the Yankees. Joe Mauer should be at second base.
With the sixth pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Johnny Flynn from
yards left hash. Snap good, spot down. Wolch's kick is up, and it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that.
I think that noise signifies that the season did end like that. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going, JP? It's going wonderfully. I just love coming here every week to hear that sound, that opening set of sound bites.
Yeah, and I added a little something to the end just for some variation so you would not get bored.
Oh, well, I'm certainly not bored. Okay. No, contemplating suicide, but not bored.
Oh, come on. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through it.
It's no joking.
It's my dream that I hope Minnesota. Now I want to see the Vikings win one.
Is that your second favorite football team?
I don't even have any favorites. I'm unbiased.
Okay.
I'd like to see Buffalo win one. I just, you know.
After the Vikings. You know my biggest nightmare? Can I share this with you?
Sure.
What's the QB's name for Buffalo? Josh Allen.
Yep.
Yeah. Takes the AFC to the Super Bowl. Somehow JJ takes the Vikings to the Super Bowl. 2-0-4 teams, and we lose to the Buffalo.
Somebody's got to win bowl.
One of the O's has got to go.
I'd like to see that.
I would not, unless we won. But anyway.
You can't really rule it out.
Yeah, really can't.
You can't. I still think the Vikes are going to be good. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We're on to episode 4 of this podcast. We're learning as we go. This is volume 3 of the Tarkington years. We got to ask a question just to start off, Mike, the pod. I got to ask you. What's the Lord got against the Vikes?
Well, if you ask my pastor, he'll tell you that the Lord has better things to do than to worry about the Vikings.
Seems like he should.
But
he's all knowing,
Jeremiah, I don't know if he listens or not, but he's a Vikings fan. But he's said this in many sermons at Westbridge Community Church that God's got better things to do than worry about the purple. Once in a while, if he'd glance over at us, it wouldn't be a bad gig.
Well, he answered somebody's prayers. That's why I brought it up. This thing called the Hail Mary. Yeah. It's a thing. Well, first of all, I have the definition here because I was just curious. It's a Roman Catholic prayer to Virgin Mary.
Roman Catholic. Yep. I was.
You got to say some more Hail Marys.
I must.
They work, apparently. So, the other definition came from Vikings loss. That's why I'm bringing it up. Today we are covering the 1975 playoffs in which the Hail Mary was born. Why was it called the Hail Mary? Because Roger Staubach, the Dallas Cowboys QB, looked left, threw a drunken duck right, said a prayer, and his prayers were answered, but everyone in Bloomington that day did not have their prayers answered. That's why I got to ask, what's going on with the big guy and the upper Midwest?
You know, it's every year we say the same thing. Give us one. There's always next year. These are some of the cliche Vikings fan sayings. There's always next year. Well, someday, before I pass away, I'm hoping that we get one. Just one. That's all I am asking for. Just one.
I would love to see that. Thank you. All right. Before we get into it, from last week, I have to correct myself. I said Joe Green was part of that tremendous rookie Steeler class. He had been playing since 69, so he'd been a vet at that point. So Steelers fans, Get off my ass.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Violent Steelers fans. I didn't know that. I knew
the email box has been flooded Steeler fans. It's biblical, the flooding that's going on in our email.
My goodness.
Everything's God themed this week.
Okay.
Biblical.
Yeah, well, good.
All right. And then we are looking for guests. We're doing all the sports. You could email, just say hi, or more likely, tell me how much I suck. The email is Misery Loves Company, MN. Mike Nancy, Misery Loves Company, MN at gmail.com. Shoot us a line if you want to be on and fuck around with Mike and I. I'll give you a free Coke Zero. You can see Misery Studios. You can uncover my identity because all of Minnesota's trying to crack the case of who JP McGillicuddy really is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I've eluded him to this point, except for the second episode where Mike clearly said my name twice. Okay. What's going on in 1975? Gerald Ford, your favorite president.
Yeah. He's right up there with Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. Woody Wilson.
Yep.
Woodrow Wilson, I don't know if there was an attempt on his life, but there was two on President Ford's life in 1975. You had mentioned, we were talking a little earlier, and you had mentioned that he was a football player.
Yeah, that's the one thing I remember. He was a collegiate football player and pretty darn good.
Played for Michigan.
Okay.
Yep, that's a real team. Yep. Yeah, well, he dodged bullets, so good for him there. Microsoft, it's a little computing company, came out in 1975.
Changed, yeah, I've heard of it.
Changed personal computing forever. Yeah, what else happened in 1975? SNL, Saturday Night Live, still around, still kicking. Arguably funny still, but it's still around.
Yeah.
You said that you had seen this episode live, or
I did.
Was it a big thing that
watched it? It was for back then the hype was there, and so my sister and I stayed up and watched it, and we laughed. We thought it was funny. It was very specific to that time, that era, that decade or whatever. But yeah, I remember it vividly. And then I recently watched it because the NBC affiliate here locally, Care 11, played it right around February, right around their 50th anniversary. And I did not laugh once.
Yeah.
So it did not hold up the humor back then. Chevy Chase is Chevy Chase. He's hilarious and was then. Yeah. Anyway.
Has anybody ever lost it more than Chevy has? He went from the funniest man ever to unfunny.
I've heard that he's a difficult person to work with. I've heard that he and Bill Murray got into a fist fight before one.
Who's
of
your money
episodes
on there?
Boy, Chevy's got the size and
Bill Murray's bigger than he looks. I mean, yeah, than people think he is.
But I don't know. That'd be a tough one. But I think I'd have to go with Chevy. You know, for me, being a shorter guy and being punched by taller guys,
yeah,
longer range, the jab would keep Bill away. That'd be my guess. But anyway, I could be wrong.
My money's on Murray.
Bill could punch his way inside and just work the obliques.
I think he's just surlier. I don't know. The way Chevy Chase acts, I'm not sure he's ever been punched in the face. And when that happens,
yeah,
you know, the Mike Tyson quote.
Well, absolutely. And a lot of those big guys haven't, you know, and because they don't have to, because they're big, and so your whole demeanor changes when you get drilled in the face a couple times.
Yeah,
from what I've heard,
it's not that fun. It's not as fun as it sounds.
No, it's funner to be the giver than the receiver.
Okay, what else is going on in 75? Milk was $1.57 a gallon. Seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, sure. Not a big milk guy, but I was
maybe
when I
that
was a
wasn't
kid
the most exciting fact. Everybody always talks about the gallon of milk, you know, like how that's like the litmus test to figure out if you're in touch or not in touch,
yeah,
with society. I'd be honest, I don't know how much a gallon of milk is because I don't drink milk.
I drink almond milk because, you know, when you get older, you try to be more healthy and blah, blah, blah. So I go to Costco and get six of those little things for $5. So I couldn't tell you what a gallon of milk costs because I haven't purchased a gallon of milk in 20 years.
But you can in 1975. $1.57.
$1.57. My mom was getting the deal.
The World Series happened in 1975. A team from the National League won. You want to make a guess at who that might have been? I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
One of their main players had the worst haircut I've ever seen.
Oh, of course. Peter, don't bet on this Rose.
Yep.
Big Red Machine.
He made a killing that year.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah, I forgot about that. They had a 2 or 3 year stint there where they were dominant.
Him and George Foster were playing craps in the dugout.
Yeah, Johnny Bench.
Johnny Bench didn't like. Wait,
who Morgan?
I think Johnny Bench didn't like Pete Rose.
Okay.
At all. Yeah, I think that's true. We'll get our data scientist here at Misery Studios to confirm that. This one tickled me just because who's the guy that had the quote? There's a sucker born every minute. What was his name? Barnum and Bailey. I think it was Barnum that said that. Anyway, yeah, the Pet Rock was the most popular toy in 1975. Do you want to describe what the Pet Rock was for some people who maybe don't know what that is?
It was, I mean, ridiculous. It was a painted rock, and you'd have different colors, different shapes, different faces.
What batteries did it take?
Zero batteries. It just sat on your table, your chair, your desk, your whatever.
Was it also a telephone?
Nope.
What else did it do?
Nothing.
Was it an alarm clock?
Nothing. That along with the mood ring, and I don't know when the mood ring came out, were the most hideous, like, why? What is the point? I know I'm in a bad mood. I don't need the freaking ring to tell me I'm in a bad mood or a good mood. Or
you think when third world countries hear about us dressing up a rock and selling it for good money, they might hate us?
Perhaps. Yeah. I don't know if there was marijuana consumed back then. I'm assuming there was. Somebody was definitely pulling on a bomb.
Marijuana didn't come out till the 90s. Everybody knows that. All right. Top grossing movies in 1975. We got the, I'm going in reverse order here. We got the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yep. Disney.
Missed it.
Tim Conway.
Don't hear anything about it. How good could it have been? Tommy, The Who.
Love it.
That's the pinball guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's deaf, like, dumb, and blind kid sure can play a mean pinball.
There you go.
From what I've heard.
The Other Side of the Mountain.
Ah, I think it's another Disney flick, but not. It's too soft for me. Sorry. Sorry, folks.
Not enough violence?
Not enough violence. Not enough comedic whatever. But yeah. No.
All right. It's number 7 on the list. Big Barbara.
Big Barbara?
Funny lady.
Oh, okay.
Streisand.
Yep, yep. Babs, as we call her in the industry. Yeah, you know.
Who was the male lead in that?
Couldn't tell you. I'm going to say Dudley Moore. No, I got nothing.
Dudley Moore.
Wait, that was 10.
Dudley Moore. Oh, yeah. That was Bo Derek.
Bo Derek.
All right. 3 Days of Condor. Checking in again on the top 10 list is Big Bob Redford.
Bobby. Yeah.
Box office gold, this guy.
Yeah, he was 60s, 70s, even into the 80s.
Just a nice looking man.
Okay.
Bastard. I was telling you that story about, I just heard on a podcast that The Graduate, starring Dustin Hoffman, Big Bob Redford was supposed to be in it or wanted to be in it, or it was Mike Nichols that made the movie, and Mike and Bob had a conversation. He's like, you're too good looking. This isn't, you know, this is supposed to be a bit of a surprise, hooking up with Mrs. Robinson. Let me ask you a question, Bob. Like, when's the last time you struck out and Robert Redford looked at Nichols and said, I don't know what you mean?
Well, yeah, he was Brad Pitt before Brad Pitt was Brad Pitt. So, yeah, good looking.
Truly.
Good looking dude.
And they were in a movie together. Which movie?
A River Runs Through It.
God damn, Mike. Hard to get one by you.
One of my favorite movies. That was the 80s, I think, wasn't it? Or early 90s. Anyway, yeah.
You ever fly fished?
No, I have not. I can barely walleye fish. But, yeah, it looks cool. Looks fun. Looks like an art.
It's fun.
You've done it?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I enjoy the, you know, like, hiking by the stream. Part of the game is finding a pool. I'll show you some pictures after
It's just so serene looking and...
All right, what else? Where were we? Condor, Return to the Pink Panther, Peter Sellers.
Nope.
We can zoom through this. Neither of us are a fan. Dog Day Afternoon.
Yep.
Al Pacino. Sidney Lumet. And John Cazale.
Yeah, he was Fredo in the first two Godfathers, right?
Yep.
Yep. And I saw a documentary. Maybe it was on Meryl Streep. Anyway, they dated for a while.
Yep.
And he was not in a lot of movies because he died.
He died early.
Or no.
He went 5 for 5. Five movies, all nominated for Best Picture. He didn't get any individual accolades, and almost no one knows his name. But John Cazale, a.k.a. Fredo, just a tremendous actor.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite. Fredo's good, but his character in The Deer Hunter.
So good.
Classic.
That movie's super dark.
Super dark, super depressing, but I loved it. I don't know why. De Niro, his character in that movie is unbelievable.
Yeah.
When he gets all of his buddies out of the POW camp.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He's a serious man, that De Niro in that movie.
Bobby.
He's not fucking around. Where were we? Shampoo.
I use it. Oh.
It's a movie.
Okay.
As well. Yeah. This one is about, it's based on this hairstylist who becomes a movie producer. And
yeah.
It's, what's his name? Help me out here. Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty.
Warren, don't call me Buffett. Beatty.
Harvey Keitel in it with a gun? No?
No.
Okay.
Then you're out. Okay. Right. Number two. In 1975, movie's box office would be One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It won Best Picture, directed by Milos Forman. A tremendous film I saw entirely too early. Didn't really understand it. But one thing I did understand is Jack has what they call charisma.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy, sort of. Right. You know, like most people, it's hardly ever black or white. He's got some good attributes, and he's got some less than good attributes. But he definitely likes the ladies.
Yeah, one of my favorite actors of all time, to be honest with you.
Jack.
Top five, top ten. But yeah, that movie, I saw it as a very young man, and I didn't understand a lot of it. I would love to go back and watch it again, but it was
classic. I think you could do that. I think you can find it. Yeah, there's some Lakers talk in there, so, you know, at that age, he was speaking to me.
Yeah.
You know?
You're a Lakers fan?
When I lived and died with Magic
Showtime.
Johnson, lived and died. Number one, it's been 50 years since it was safe to go in the water. I got a lot of facts about Jaws coming up.
I watched Jaws 2 last night
because
you and I were talking about it last week. And still freaked out as a grown man, you know, under the water. You didn't see it. Then you saw the fin.
Fear of the unknown.
And then these kids are falling into the ocean. And I'm like, come on, get out, get out. You know, found myself doing this last night. I'm like, my goodness. Now, I will say that when Bruce's cousin, Lenny, or whoever the second shark was, not great special effects at all. But great for 1977 or whatever it was. But. Yeah, that's the first one, great movie. You said last week it was a blockbuster.
It was the first,
Yeah, changed.
I have some facts about Jaws in no particular order. It was the first summer blockbuster. Back then in 1975, they didn't roll out movies on every screen, you know, they kind of built up to it, did whatever, 100 screens nationwide built up.
Yep.
Well, they knew Jaws because it had been a smash novel. Spielberg did a nice job. Once they got the final cut, they knew it was going to be a smash hit. So they said, fuck it, let's just roll it out. The producers wanted 900 screens. The studio boss cut that in half, and they rolled it out to 450 theaters all at once. First movie to gross over $100 million.
Wow.
And this is the most startling fact that I found as far as its popularity is concerned. In 1979, you know, 4 years after it came out in theaters, they screened it for the first time on television on ABC. 57% of the viewing audience turned in for Jaws.
Wow, that is unbelievable. Can you give me
cast a sneeze. Just go ahead and do it.
Can you? I don't know Nielsen, but what is that a good?
Oh, that's Super good? Bowl will get you about 30%.
Oh, wow. Okay. So very good. Now,
smash.
Keep in mind, back in 1979, we had four channels, or three, I think.
That's technically true.
So we didn't have streaming. We didn't have, but that's still a heck of a stat. Very impressive.
Yeah. The mechanical shark had a name. It was named Bruce, named after Spielberg's lawyer. So,
what?
You know, shark lawyer, thing.
Took me a second, but I got it.
Cute. Mrs. Kittner.
Who is hot, by the way. I just saw her last night. I'm like,
Mrs. Kittner?
Mrs. Kittner, I would. I'm sorry.
I think we're talking about the wrong person here, Mike. Mrs. Kittner.
Oh, not Mrs. Brody. She's
Mrs. Brody, different person.
Okay, yeah. No, Mrs. Kittner is the old lady that, okay, yep.
She's...
But I still would.
Okay.
No,
watch out, Mrs. Kittner. I think Mrs. Kittner's probably moved on from this world as she was,
All right. Sorry.
That's a difference.
I've had a lot of caffeine today, folks. Sorry. Just kidding.
Mrs. Kittner, if you remember in the movie, she slaps Roy Schreider's character,
yes,
Brody, because Schreider knew, or Brody knew that there was, you know, a shark in the area, and he relented to the business owners and the mayor and kept the beaches open, and then lo and behold, Mrs. Kittner's boy got ingested by a shark. She wasn't an actress, and she does a really nice job slapping him in the face and telling him about how angry she was.
Yeah. You don't need to go to Juliet to learn how to slap somebody in the face, I guess.
Yeah, I was just really impressed. I was shocked to hear that was just a local resident.
Yeah.
The most famous line from the movie, arguably, you're going to need it a bigger boat, is actually the line, ad-libbed by Roy Schreider. Nice job, Roy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the moment and you're just feeling the movie, if it's a good production, magic comes out of it sometimes, and I feel like that was a magical line that everybody knows and
still
will live on
to this day
forever. Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss, who played Hooper. Well, Robert Shaw would have been what the fuck? Every once in a while I have these brain farts.
Yeah.
Quint. Robert Shaw played Quint, the shark hunter.
Quinn. Is it Quint? I thought it was Quinn. That was
Quint.
Anyway, all right, we'll have an off-air wager to see if it's Quint or Quinn. Email us.
I'll bet you my pink slip in my car that it's Quint. All right, yeah, him and Dreyfuss didn't get along well at all, and you can sort of see that in the production. The vitriol between them was real, so I thought that was interesting. Robert Shaw, allegedly, he liked to knock a few back, Mike?
That's what I've heard.
But he was a very lovely guy when he was sober, but he was never sober.
Never sober. Even during, as they're producing the movie, he wasn't sober?
Well, I have another fact. There's a scene where they're talking about the USS Indianapolis, right? And it's a memorable scene. It's based on a true story. There was this ship, the USS Indianapolis, during the World War II for the atomic bomb. It was used. I mean, that stuff was so secret. The U.S. military lost track of this this vessel, and a Japanese U-boat put some torpedoes into it, and it slowly sank, and the sailors, these poor fellows, went into the water on their little life rafts, and before too long in the Indian Ocean, tiger sharks showed up, among other sharks, and this is all a true story. They started picking them off. Well, anyway, you asked if Robert Shaw enjoyed the drink on set. Well, in this particular case, they were all drunk. So I guess that wouldn't have been a bad thing to be drunk, but he got so sloppy, they couldn't use a single take.
Mm.
Shaw, he had some issues, but he was a professional. He called Spielberg and he said, give me another crack at it. And the next day he got it on the first take, and it's
nice.
Incredible scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. What else do we got here? I mentioned earlier that there was a book, and I thought it was kind of interesting that the major differences between the book and the movie. In the book, Hooper, played by Dreyfuss, gets down with your gal, Mrs. Brody.
Yeah.
Whole different movie.
Lorena Gray. I Googled her last night.
You did.
I was watching. I'm like, then I'm like, was she the first?
You know how she got that job?
How?
The studio boss who cut it from 900 to 450.
Yeah.
The studio boss of Paramount or whatever, I forget which.
Yeah.
That was her husband.
Wow. Well, she did a great job.
Yeah, I know. Nepotism worked out in this case.
Indeed.
All right. So that's one of my favorite movies, Jaws. Hopefully there's a few facts in there that you guys didn't know already. It changed the industry. If you haven't seen Jaws, what's wrong with you? But go see it.
Facts are good. In the words of the movie Animal House, I don't remember which character, knowledge is good. Do you remember that?
No.
Knowledge.
Is that Blutarsky?
It's like, really?
Pluto. Knowledge.
Wow, thank you.
I've heard I can't read good. All right, records. Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Number one, With Boom. A Bullet.
Yes.
Your Boys, Led Zeppelin.
Zap.
Why don't you grow your hair out, Mike?
Physical. Yeah, no, it's thinning, so it would be.
Not happening?
Not happening.
Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic.
Good one.
Okay. Kiss Alive, which is a live record.
I like them more now. I wasn't a Kiss fan. My buddy Jay was like, he'd go to the concerts with makeup on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And but I like them more now than I did in the 70s. Anyway.
So. Yeah. They got a few good songs. Gene Simmons kind of turns me off. Like the whole, like, at least he doesn't hide it. I mean, that's a vehicle for making money. It's not really about the art, in my opinion. But they did put on a great stage show. And
exactly.
They influenced a bunch of people who I like. So
right.
We'll give him a pass. Number five, Bruce, Born to Run.
Yes, good.
Are you
good
a Bruce storyteller? Guy?
I am. He's certainly top 10, maybe top 20. But good, great storyteller. Yeah, can't go wrong with Bruce.
He knows how to make you feel things, Bruce does.
Indeed.
At least
indeed
me.
Indeed he does.
Fleetwood Mac, number six, self-titled.
Yeah.
America, Greatest Hits, the band America. What are they known for?
I think they now call them America.
America?
Yep. The Horse with No Name.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Yep. Chicago.
Oh.
I think it was the 4th of July, very relevant.
Top five band for me.
Really?
Chicago. Yep.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yes. They were just here in Minnesota about a month ago, and I couldn't make it up to St. Cloud. They have an outdoor amphitheater up there, and I couldn't make it up. I was bummed.
Well, maybe next time, if there was a next time. Queen, Night at the Opera would be number nine. And
top
then
five.
Yousef Islam.
I've got about 10 top five bands, just so you know.
the math
doesn't work.
The math isn't checking out there. Number 10 was Yousef Islam, a.k.a. Cat Stevens.
Ah.
Greatest Hits.
Yeah. Wild World. I can hear the song, but yeah. Not in my top five.
Cat's Cradle.
Yeah.
That's the one I know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's some good records on here, and there were some good records in the top 100, which kind of shits on my point last week that I said, you know, the drugs are taking their toll, and they certainly are. I mean, objectively, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Graham Parsons, who influenced the Stones, you know, like the Wild Horses kind of sound, you know, that country kind of sound that the Stones got into, that was all Graham Parsons. They've all died, and I'm sure many more are strung out. And disco is coming, but pretty good year for rock and roll. Still going. I think it's dying. Corporate's getting their tentacles in there and changing it to a certain sound. And, disco's coming, and so is punk.
So along with disco and punk, the advent of the drum machine, which I just am not a fan of. My son's an amazing drummer, but... Yeah, the drum machine. I don't remember if that was the 80s or whatever, but yeah, this is when music.
It could be the drum machine could be used for good and evil.
Yes,
there's some good stuff out there, but mostly evil. All right, the number one song in 1975 was Captain and Tennille. Put on your
Muskrat
hat. No, not Muskrat. Love Will Keep Us Together.
Oh,
I did say last week that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So Joy Division, kind of a punky post-punk indie band in 1980, wrote a song called Love Will Tear Us Apart. And that's for you, Captain and Tennille. So
suck on that, Captain and Tennille.
All right, we got a new thing. We're going to take scheduled breaks. We're going to take our first break right now, and we'll be back in a minute. All right, we're back after a word from our sponsor, which was?
Ole Larsen and his world-famous casserole. I just made that all up. Sorry, Minnesotans.
Oh, I was disappointed. I wanted to buy a casserole. I like Ole Larsen's.
Ole Larsen.
Ole Larsen.
Yeah, people don't believe that I'm from Minnesota because I have zero Minnesota accent, but my parents are from another country, so nope, never acquired that accent. Anyway,
all right,
I digress.
Okay, so we're back, and here's what we're gonna do, Mike. I have pulled some since we're talking about the Hail Mary, since unfortunately, you know, for Minnesota fans, they're a part of this history of where the Hail Mary was coined, I guess.
Yeah.
So we'll listen to some of the more famous ones, just so you can not be alone. Other people have been beat and had their hearts torn out,
yeah,
and shown to them in last seconds. Let's,
even the Vikes have had two that I can think of. But anyway, go ahead.
They've been on the other side of it too.
Yes, they have.
There's one team that God certainly hates more than the Vikings, and we'll get to that. But let's start with our first clip.
Here we go. Here's your ball game, folks, as Flutie takes the snap. He drops straight back, has some time, now scrambles away from one hit. Looks, uncorks a deep one for the end zone. Phelan is down there.
Oh, he got it!
Did he get it?
He got it!
Touchdown! 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 Touchdown, Boston College! He did it! He did it! Flutie did it! He got Phelan in the end zone! Touchdown!
One for the Shouties.
Yeah, Doug Flutie.
5 foot nothing.
Yeah, which is one. I liked Flutie because, you know, I capped out at 5'10", so I think he was 5'9", and still made it as an NFL QB. And I'm not a big college football guy, but I remember seeing that on ESPN, and I'm like, wow, that's cool.
I pulled it because that's kind of the first thing. Yeah. One of the first memories when I think of Hail Marys, I definitely think of Flutie. You know, going back, I was a little too young to be, you know, aware of what was going on, but. You know, I've heard that play's been shown, you know, it's a historic play.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it made Flutie won the Heisman. Yeah, I looked at the play, probably threw it 55 yards in the air.
That's a good toss.
Not bad for a little guy.
Yeah.
All right, let's see who's next here. Oh, speaking of plays that make somebody. This guy's probably known as the best at this particular play, this Hail Mary.
Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in him? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown.
You remember it?
I do. It was a Monday night game. I was kind of nodding off on the couch because I thought the game was over. And obviously, he was a Packer at the time. So as a Vikes fan, we're taught to dislike the Packers and vice versa. So, yeah, of course, I just shook my head and went, yeah. He was kind of a magic man. I remember it well. I'm sure the folks in Detroit remember it too.
What? We'll get into this later, but just briefly, what was the mood when Brett Favre came over here?
Oh, my goodness. I was always a Brett Favre fan, and even when he was playing for the Packers, because he's just one of those good old boys that you'd want to have a beer with, right? And actually, I got a bunch of folks that wanted to beat me up in Lambeau once because I was in the bathroom by myself and wearing purple. Anyway, so when he came over, again, being a huge Brett Favre fan anyway, I was euphoric. Packer fans, they're burning his jersey. A lot of Packer fans in Minnesota. Obviously, being a border.
Olson with his casseroles, just torching.
Yeah, Ole. Of course. Yeah.
Torching his jerseys.
Yes, all the Swedes here were not happy that we're Packer fans. But yeah, we loved it. That was another magical year that we fell on our face. But
oh, we're going to get there.
We'll get there.
I remember that one.
Yeah. So do I.
I was alive and well.
So do
I only said that because, there was a fair chance. I felt like Rodgers could have came over here.
Yeah. I don't think.
He's in Pittsburgh. That doesn't seem like a good fit.
No, but we have O'Connell, and I think O'Connell is a, you know, who was it back then? Childress. Chile was not a good coach.
Part of the Childress is part of the Belichick over 70 hot ex-cheerleader girlfriend club.
Oh, okay.
You ever see Childress's girlfriend?
I have not.
I'm gonna look that up one day.
Well, I'm going to have to because that's shocking. Because
I know.
Mr. Peepers is my father-in-law used to call him Mr. Peepers. Google that character.
So that was, cut you off.
No, don't be.
That was Rodgers versus Detroit. They call that one the Miracle Motown. Rodgers is really good at it. Politics aside, personality aside, mustache aside, he's good at it. Here's my collateral. Here's my proof as to why I believe that there's one team that the Lord doesn't like as much as he likes the Vikes. And let's hear a clip from that.
The only team.
But here, let's listen to my evidence here.
Oh, they're going to throw that ball up in the air and hope for a miracle, either a catch or a defensive penalty.
Art Modell is worried, and you can see what. 5 seconds to go. A 20-yard
50-yard pass, sideline, 15-yard pass, stops the clock with 1 second to go. Field goal would win it.
Up in the air.
Going deep.
They're hoping.
Tip, caught,
Jacob.
You're kidding. The Vikings, they win it. Time is run out. Minnesota, they are the champions.
I think that was 1980 against Sam Ritigliano and the Cleveland Browns. Two-minute Tommy chucks one up down the right sideline and hits Ahmad Rashad.
Yes. Ahmad, that's his second biggest accomplishment. Number one being friends with Michael Jordan.
Okay. And then did you know his real name was Bobby Moore?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
There's a guy that plays poker with me in downtown, his nephew, Terry Moore. I know he went on to do a bunch of stuff with like Inside the NBA, which I never understood the transition to that.
And he was married to
Felicia Rashad
on the Cosby's. Wow, that show looks a lot different knowing what we know now.
Indeed. You missed one, though.
What I missed?
You missed the Minneapolis Miracle 2017.
All right, with Diggs.
Nondescript QB. Can you name the QB?
Yep.
I'm drawing a blank.
No. I think he went to Texas Tech.
Yeah, backup.
Mike
Zimmer hated him.
He's like the perfect Mendoza line for like,
yeah,
the average, you know what I mean, journeyman QB. You think of him. I just can't pull his name right now.
And nor can I, because I was asking in hopes that you knew his name.
Like they had a good season, then the guy won't get – he's still bumping around the league,
I believe. I think he's a backup in Buffalo. But anyway, so that was a fantastic – not really a Hail Mary, but a game-ending overtime. I'm not a big fan of Sean Payton. I think he's a tool. And he is from all
accounts.
There's a book out. Anyway,
he let Bounty Gate happen.
He did.
We're gonna get there.
Yep, we will get there. So yeah.
All right. Well, from the warm and fuzzies to the not so much.
To a second and 10. 32 seconds left. He is going to go through Pearson. Touchdown. I didn't know they had it for a while. I thought the ball passed. Much better catch than it was a throw. Let's take a look at it here, Gary.
Better catch than it was a throw. Hold your thoughts, Mike. We're going to dissect this like a biology student to a fetal pig. Where are my nerds at? That one's really funny if you ever have biology class. All right. We're going to get there. Let's go through the 1975 regular season. Vikes, Coach Grant said it was the best team, and here's why. They were 12-2, okay? They had the league's MVP playing quarterback. Your guy, Fran.
Sir Francis.
Yes, sir. Chuck Foreman, out of his head. I mean, just insane. I was kind of joking when I called him a fantasy god on prior episodes. Turns out he's every bit a fantasy god. Here, I compiled his stats together. Mike, you play fantasy, correct?
I do.
Okay.
I'm a guillotine league guy.
You love it.
I do.
Okay. Well, Chuck Foreman's someone you would want to pick up because here was his season. Now, mind you, this is 14 games, so I added up all the points. And I divided by 14. He had 73 receptions. This is PPR format. That means point per reception, non-fantasy guys out there. Of course, you probably tuned out by now. So 73 receptions, 22 TDs in 14 games. That's quite impressive. Mm-hmm. 1765 all-purpose yards.
Mm-hmm.
I added all those up, divided by all the points up, and divided by 14, 27 points a game.
Wow.
27 points a game. One player.
Yeah.
To put this in context, Saquon had a tremendous year last year, probably the fantasy MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody saw that coming.
Nope.
Well, not really. Yeah. 22.2 points, PPR points a game. So,
jeez.
I'm speechless. If you know fantasy, that is a legend.
No.
That's Christian
McCaffrey.
Well,
when you put
that
comparison out, that's very
insane.
Impressive. Indeed.
Now, I will say this, and it happened a couple years ago. Do you remember this season? It was like 3-4 years ago when Kirk Kirky led the Vikes to a pretty good record, but everybody knew they were paper tigers.
Kirko changed. Yeah, they were 13-3. Have the best comeback in the history of the NFL against the Colts. That was like 3 years ago. Yeah.
And then they lost the first game of the playoffs.
Yeah,
right?
Against the Giants, who are crap.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well,
I'm over it.
They were that season. They were a bit of paper tigers, and someone makes the point that in this season in particular, their competition, not counting the game that they played against the Vikes, was 346. That means, you know, roughly 30. They're winning one out of three games. So how good were they, Mike? I mean, I trust Bud Grant. This man knows football. He's seen lots of teams. He coached there forever. He said it was their best team.
Yeah.
But they didn't play the – they. I mean, what is it? Sharpened steel, whatever it was.
Iron sharpens iron.
That's the saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have that going into – so I'm wondering if that plays a role in some of this, disappointment in the playoffs.
You know, I'd be curious to see the scores of those games, but another old saying, you should not have to apologize for your schedule. You know, you just can only play the folks that are – put in front
That's
of
true.
You, you know, and I don't know. I don't know if they just blew every squad out. If they obviously lost two games too. So
I'll look at the point margin for next week, and we'll see what's doing.
Interesting.
One thing we do know is that typically it's the offense that, you know, kills the season for them, and it was no exception this year.
Yeah.
You know, the final score ended up being 14-17. Around the league, Ken Anderson from the Bengals was leading the league in passing. He threw for 3,169 yards. Fran was in second. Roger Staubach in third. Rushing, Uncle Juice, he's back. 18-17 in 14 games. That's pretty fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-talented, that guy.
Yeah.
Actor, running back.
Murderer.
Liddell Mitchell, never heard of him. I mean, the disparity between OJ and Liddell is 700 yards.
Who did Liddell play for?
The Baltimore Colts.
Colts. It sounds familiar.
I was going to say, when I was listening to that, speaking of Baltimore, when I was listening to that clip and they mentioned Modell.
Yeah. Art Modell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you blame them for getting him out of Cleveland? They have one, you know what I mean? If there's only one city that's worse off than Minnesota, can you believe? Like, he literally, like, left in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe he had his reasons is all I'm saying.
He was one of the last ones. Didn't they kind of put the kibosh on that because of that move?
I don't know.
The Mayflower semis?
Maybe so.
Rolling out, yeah.
Okay, and then receiving leaders. Ken Burrow, he played for the Oilers. He had 1,063 yards. Number two, Chuck
Dan
Foreman.
Dan Pastorini, sorry. Remember him?
I've heard of him.
QB for the Oilers. They had Earl Campbell, too. But anyway, yeah, sorry.
Pastorini?
Dan Pastorini, another Paisan. It's the only reason.
It's weird that you would remember him.
Shout out to the Dagos.
Yeah. Great. Is there anything in particular that you remember about the season that you want to highlight? Were you living and dying every week? Were you watching every Sunday?
Oh, yeah. If I could. That particular game, we had a hockey game. So I only caught the last minute of the game. So I got back just in time.
Right. The actual. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, week to week.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't have a hockey game, we were glued to the TV. But my old man and I,
but was the chatter around Minneapolis like, oh, they're going to fuck it up again? Or are you already talking about this?
At school, we were.
Curse?
I was in seventh grade. So.
Yeah.
no, didn't talk curse. We just, you know, after the fact, we were all pretty PO'd. Because
it's three Super Bowls now.
Yep. Three Super Bowls. And this was a blatant, in my opinion, a blatant push off. I think Drew, if he were standing here, would admit to it, but maybe he wouldn't. Anyway, so yeah.
Well, we have a little quote from him coming later.
Mm.
That's pretty telling, in my opinion.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. I was just trying to understand what, you know. Clearly, now you talk to any Minnesota sports fan, and that's the first thing that comes out of their mouth. I was talking to a gentleman. He's like, "Yeah, telling him a little bit about the podcast." He's like, "Oh yes, if you're going to be a Minnesota Vikings fan, you have to sign right here saying that you're willing to get your heart broken and all this." Like, it's in the contract when you sign up.
Okay. And you have to sign it in blood.
You have to sign in blood.
Yeah. Well,
you have to give your firstborn.
I'm sure, like, the adults back then, because, you know, I was a kid, but, you know, we were crushed and crying and, you know, all that good other happy stuff. But I'm sure the adults back then started talking, you know, curse, superstition, blah, blah, blah. I do now, after living 5.5 decades of misery. Yeah.
Do you it's not just the losses, it's the way in which. Well, the first, let's be fair, the first three Super Bowls haven't been, you can't say it was bad luck. They didn't put any points on the board.
No, they did not. They not bad luck, but just a bad time to be playing poorly. The Steelers Super Bowl, I think I mentioned it, they finally get a drive before half, hits John Gilliam right in the chest, right between the numbers. Ball pops up in the air. They intercept it on the 1-yard line. You know, things like that. That are, you know,
bad breaks, oblong shaped ball, and takes funny bounces, and
you know,
single
every
elimination.
Super Bowl.
You know, anything can happen. The best teams obviously don't win. The Patriots won all those games that year, and then the Giants. They weren't the better team. It's just
right. Yeah. So
you run that game 100 times, Patriots probably win 75 of them.
Right.
But
yeah,
we remember the winners and the losers.
Yeah. I seem to remember the losers more because
you
that's why we have a podcast.
You're surrounded by them. All right. So there's only one game to talk about. After the regular season, they drew America's team. Coach Landry and the boys come into Bloomington. And at half, the Vikings up 7-0. Defense is doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
As they pretty much had in all the games I've researched, the defense holds up, Mike. Like, they're going to get tired. If Fran's doing 3 and outs and they got to go, you know, they're playing for paychecks too. One thing I did notice about watching this old film, it does look like everyone's in slow motion just because, like, the training is so much more advanced. The diets are more advanced.
Specialized.
The drugs are more advanced.
The training is special.
It
does
look like slow motion, but they are busting their ass out there because of the paychecks that we mentioned earlier.
Well, and not to mention all the rules back then, the rules now that weren't in place back then. The head slap was legal. You could chop somebody, hit them high, hit them low when you're blocking a line, you know, stuff like that that would not fly now. You can't even touch a QB anymore. But yeah, you know.
For good reason.
Yeah.
They make him play 17 games and the product would be so watered down with backup QBs. The disparity between watching, you know, Aaron Rodgers in his prime or Mahomes or one of these guys today versus whoever their backups are is like watching, you know.
Yeah.
It's the difference between watching, you know, Godfather 2 and wherever the fuck they put out these
Godfather
days.
3.
Exactly.
Which was garbage. Good point. You know, you had asked me a question a couple episodes ago about, do you blame Bud Grant? And I never do. I think he's a genius or was a genius. I blame Jerry Burns.
We're going to get into that next episode.
Okay.
I didn't have time. We have so much to chew on.
Yeah. So
that we're going to try to rationalize as to why they lost four. And if you want to call that, this isn't a fifth Super Bowl clearly, but why they went down in flames in the playoffs 5 times when they had the best team, basically.
Yep.
All right. So I just wanted to do the stats from the game because I have a little treat for you, Mike. Are you ready?
I'm ready for a treat.
Okay. You're going to like this. All right. Fran went 12 for 26. Not the treat, by the way. Oh. Fran went 12 for 26 with 135. No TDs. He had a pick. He had 3 rushes for 36 yards.
Jeez.
Okay.
That's 12
yards of rush. Staubach had no. The big difference is he had a few more yards in the touchdown and no interceptions. He was 17 for 29, 246. He had the TD, no picks. Rushing.
And most of those yards probably came in that final drive, but go ahead.
Well, at least 85 did.
85. So look at that. You take, he'd be at 160 yards.
Yeah. Yep. Rushing. Dallas had a trio of running backs with 30-something yards.
Foreman, was Robert Newhouse one of them?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Foreman had 18 for 56. He had a TD. Okay.
18 for 50. That's very pedestrian.
Maybe if we get our new mixer, I'll have more buttons so I could do a drum roll because I'd be hitting that right now. Ed Marinaro, 5 for 64, leading receiver. Let's go, Paisan.
All right. My spaghetti bending buddy.
And then this is going to, I'm giving you some joy, and now let me take it away.
why not?
Four catches for 91 yards, Drew Pearson in that TD. Guess how many yards he had before that last drive?
10.
Zero.
Zero. So I was shooting high with the 10.
All right. Let's go through the timeline, everybody. So let me be clear. The Minnesota Vikings are winning this game 14-10 in the fourth quarter, and they punt it away and or kick it. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Dallas gets the ball with 1:51 to go in the game at the 15-yard line, their own 15-yard line. Now, here's the events as they occur in order that I found interesting. First thing, they've been having a problem with their center all game for low snaps. Yeah, they replaced. They had a bad snap at 106, Mike. You see that right there?
I do.
They lost a bunch of yards, and they replace on a 4th and 17. They replace their center. Tom Landry, give me someone in there that can get it back to Starbucks. So they just, whatever, they threw a new center in there. It's 4th and 17.
4th and 17.
Game's over.
Yeah, think about that. It's 4th and 17.
4th and 17 on their own, like, I think it's like the 35 or so. Starbuck, they're playing backyard football at this point. Like, Starbuck and Pierce are having conversations. He's like, yeah, do a post corner. He does the post corner. I was watching the film, and I'm like, oh, the game should have been over right there. There's no way he caught that in bounds. And it's true. Everybody knew he didn't even get 1 foot down. But the old force out rule, Mike,
mm-hmm.
bottom some time, bottom a first down. The Wright brothers, I forget which one it was.
Orville?
Yeah.
No. Nate, it could be Nate Wright or.
What is the other Orville? Orville and Redenbach. Redenbacher. One of the Wright brothers pushed him out, and he probably should have just let him. He wouldn't have got 2 feet in, but, you know, it's a bang-bang play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to blame the player there. He's just doing his absolute best, I'm sure. But, you know, they got the first down. So they get a first down. Now there's about 45 seconds left. On the sideline, Drew Pearson, on the play that we're just talking about, the 4th and 17 first down, I think he got a 19-yard catch. He caught it out of bounds. He's laying there, and there's a – I use the word security guard loosely – a security guard named Dick J, that's what we're going to call him, walks over to him. He's frustrated, and he kicks him. But mm-hmm. It's not hard. It's very hard to describe.
Yeah, I saw that clip.
It's completely uncalled for and inappropriate.
Yeah.
But it's not ugly.
No.
You know, it's like he's just frustrated, and he does like a little, I called it, you know, in quotes, I have it on the board, love tap.
Mm-hmm.
You watched it. What do you...
I thought the inappropriate, not uncalled for, shouldn't have happened. I know the Vikes paid him to kind of showboat around, but when you're starting to touch the players,
that's where you're wrong, Mike. They were not paying him to showboat around. They were paying him to do security.
No,
and he was a showboat.
Right, but one of the executives for the Vikes said, you know, run up and down the field. And
they were encouraging it?
They were encouraging it,
oh.
Yeah.
Well, Bud Grant didn't like it. And that's where I check out. I side with Bud at all times.
I'm with you on that. I don't need to, it's not to digress here, but I was watching the Bananas baseball team last night.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen this?
No.
They do backflips and they do dances, and it's on ESPN. I'm a baseball purist. Anyway, we'll get into that another time. But same thing with this Dick J. Just do your job and shut the heck up.
Yeah. I mean,
don't touch anybody.
Nobody's at that
Nobody
stadium
cares.
To watch you.
Right.
If anything, they're laughing at you, not with you. Sorry. I have a little sensitive spot for people that just are attention seekers, like,
yeah.
Grossly. Anyway, so he kicks. We'll file that away. That was at 45 seconds. So then at some point, Staubach says to Pearson, go deep. Pearson says, I'm out of gas. Can't do it. So Staubach, again, backyard football. He just takes a snap, burns some time. He throws a little outlet pass to a running back named Preston Pearson, and this bounces off his – hit him in a bad spot. Where is that, Mike?
In the mitts, right in the hands.
Right in the hands. Bounces right off. Stops the clock, okay?
Which probably saved the game, by the way. But anyway, for
Stops the clock. It's just the complexion of the game changes. If you don't stop the clock right there, they're hustling up.
Yep.
They have to down it. By the way, the announcers and just the whole broadcast, not very informative. I had to constantly pause and look things up. The announcers couldn't be bothered to tell me if there were any timeouts left, how much time was on the clock, because they didn't have the graphic back then, 75 technology. So
yeah,
bad job by them. Anyway, so yeah, it just changes the complexion of the game. I thought it was interesting. Hit him right in the hands. If he catches it, they have to hustle. At that point, there's 37 seconds left. It probably would have took them 10, 12, 15 seconds. You got to think there's like now 20 seconds. Does that change their strategy? Do the Vikes get lined up in defense in a more preventative way that would stop a long pass? It's an unanswerable question, but I found it interesting nonetheless. It definitely wasn't on purpose. This dude just dropped the ball, and it changed the complexion of the game. All right, so the big play, 32 seconds left after he drops the – or, yeah, 32 seconds left. Staubach takes the snap. He looks left, looks left, looks left, throws back across his body right. Like I said earlier, a wounded duck. Mm-hmm. Underthrown from the angle I see, there's no obvious overt – PI, OPI, in my opinion, at least not enough to overturn it. They only have the one angle, though. You guys can look at it yourself. It's not a hard play to find on YouTube. But for me, he probably pushed him, but I'm not overturning it. I'm sure, Mike, you have a different take.
I do, but that's why I'm here.
You're here to give that take.
Yeah, to me, it was a clear push-off. Yeah. Bud was a heck of a lot closer than I was on TV in the locker room at the hockey game. Bud thought it was a push-off. I think Drew Porce. Okay.
Yeah, I got a quote. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Here's what Coach Bud had to say. From our side of the field, from our side of the field being pretty important. I mean,
yeah.
Confirmation bias. But from their side of the field, there's no question that Nate was pushed. No question. Pearson had nothing to lose. If they called a penalty on him, what had he lost? They would have
15 yards, 10 yards.
Yeah, they would just line up and try another long pass. It was one chance in 100 that he would get away with that. But it was the only chance he had. So, and then Pearson says, it was a little bit short, so I had to come back a little, and that gave me a chance to get away from Nate. Because Nate had good coverage on the ball. I mean, he was covered.
He did.
Under throwing, I mean, you know, I'm an agnostic person, but there was some divine intervention there.
Yeah, there was.
If it's not over.
But I'm over.
You and your pastor need to get together with God and really figure out what the fuck we did wrong over here. You guys did wrong over here. Anyway, the ball juggled around a little, and finally I caught it between my elbow and my ribs. I thought I might have gotten away with pass interference.
I thought I might have. Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, it's neither here nor there. It could have gone either way. That means that it was definitely pass interference. Mm. All right, so this is where the real fun begins, because you know, in the broadcast, you see a little orange thing through the screen. I'm like, oh, there's the penalty. No, it's just a false alarm. Just to twist the knife that much more into you guys. Of course, you weren't watching.
No, I was in the locker room for the last minute.
Yeah.
So, yes, because we all went, flag, flag, and was an orange.
Yeah.
It was not a flag.
Wow, that's insult to injury right
it
there.
It really is.
And then some of the rowdier fans threw, well, I know one gentleman threw a half-drinking whiskey bottle and clocked this field judge, Armin Terzian, right in the melon.
Armin.
He needed stitches, and one of the first people out of his side was the aforementioned security guard or entertainer or whatever we're calling him, Dick J. And my point is, it just reminded me of the movie Top Gun, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm younger, I'm on Maverick's side. I'm on Tom Cruise's side. Like, who cares? He's just, you know, when at a certain point in the movie, Val Kilmer confronts Tom Cruise and he says, hey, when you were off showboating with that MiG, who was watching Cougar's Tail? I mean, the guy's having a panic attack. There's some miscellaneous communist country about to unload some, you know, some heat-seeking missiles into the back of his plane. And Goose is taking pictures. They're flipping people off. They're having a great time. Really reminiscent of what we have here. Dick J is off kicking players, not doing his job as a security guard. And meanwhile, the fans are doing what they want to do because the security guard's doing, you know, cartwheels on the side. Yeah. And somebody throws a whiskey bottle and somebody gets hurt. So, yeah, I'm glad you went to go help Armin, Dick. But maybe you could have prevented it if you weren't such a show off.
Well, you think about consuming a half bottle of whiskey, minimally, probably some beers in there too. It may have prevented, but I think this kid was destined to chuck this thing regardless.
You don't think Dick could have done anything about it?
I, you know, well, you
what
look
about
at,
getting in the way and
well,
catching it?
Well, maybe that.
He likes to catch
maybe
things.
That.
That, yeah. Let me ask you this. He catches every extra point the Vikes kick. Maybe yeah. he could have caught this
that
and
I,
done a little behind the back with the whiskey bottle.
That, that I agree with. I think he could have maybe deflected it or caught it or whatever. But that kid was going to chuck it regardless. And, you know, it's uncalled for. I don't condone that. Vikings fans or any fans, not acceptable.
Yeah, the announcers didn't like it either. One announcer said, you know, you'd think the way they're – acting, they're down in Argentina where they stab soccer players. Literally, word for word, that sentence was said, so I'll let you interpret that any way you want.
Yeah.
Well, and the Vikes offered $5K for reward. The gentleman who we're not going to name, I found it in the archives of the Star Tribune, he was apprehended and faced consequences. Those consequences were either, I think it was like a month in jail or $100. He went with the $100.
Okay.
I hope he learned his
a
lesson.
A month in jail?
Something like that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
$100 was.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot of dough back then. And his son, Steve Bateman, ended up making some headlines, too.
So that's 75. How are you feeling, Mike?
Feeling great.
Are you? Is that sarcasm?
That is
chance?
Total sarcasm. Because, again, I watched the end of the game. We lost 3-1. Frigid day. We're sitting there taking our equipment off, our skates off, and then that happens. And of the 17 of us on our team, 16 were pretty ticked off. And there was one kid who was a Bears fan. No, I'm sorry, not a Bears, a Cowboys fan.
Really?
And he and I got into it because, again, I was diehard and I was angry. And I actually ended up chucking my skate, not at him, but
near
towards
him.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's a lethal weapon. But, yeah. And then my teammates had to separate him and I. I won't mention his name because I know he's still alive. But, yeah, so I was angry beyond belief. Got home. Another night of crying.
Yeah.
We lost 3-1.
I wonder what your dad threw.
Whatever was near him.
Not your sister.
No. No. Nope.
Okay, good.
There was usually a coffee table in, next to him, and he just grabbed whatever was there. We didn't have remotes back then. I was the remote.
That's so, fun.
Yeah.
Little gopher.
Only three channels, so
yeah.
Not a real hard job. Yeah, so, yeah. Another,
that's it.
Another
1975,
day
another heartbreak. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get into my artist of the week here in a minute. I'm just trying to think if we forgot anything. Yeah, it was really interesting. It's a bummer. You know, I'm going to get into next week how Bud was broken by this, apparently. For a guy who, you know, I was... emulate these guys, you know, these guys that play poker and they take the worst beat ever and you can't read it on their face. That's how Bud was, but apparently this was the one that broke him.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Maybe I'll find out some information about
about
how he reacted. But the history tells us it couldn't have been that bad because they get right back there versus the Raiders in the Super Bowl. I mean, say what you want about Minnesota. Maybe it was for the money, maybe it was for the extra playoff cash, but in this day and age, there is a trend where if you make it to the Super Bowl, you're pretty deflated the next year. You have to be 10 out of 10 motivated to compete at these levels. And these guys came back each and every year, whipped the competition they put in, whoever put in front of them, and you know they never got it over the line.
No.
That I would be proud of them if I was if I cared about uniforms.
Right. And, you know, now versus when I was a kid, I mean, this one stung for quite some time. The next year that we'll get into next week was the worst loss of my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Me either.
All right. Let's shift gears here. 1975, gentleman named Bruce Springsteen put out a record called Born to Run, and Bruce is a very important artist to me, Mike, because my first concert was, well, what was yours?
Ted Nugent opened by the Scorpions, 1978.
That's not bad.
Not a bad gig.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
I was 5 or 6, and mine was Bruce Springsteen, and it was a proper indoctrination to rock and roll. I just, you know, my parents did a really nice job of getting me out to that first concert that mattered. And, Yeah, I'll never forget it. Now, the second concert was Kenny Loggins. So, guys, one out of two ain't bad. Kenny, I probably could have stayed home and
did you guys
Cheerios.
Take the highway to the danger zone?
No, I think we took service streets that night. Well, anyways.
Were you all right? All right, that's from Caddyshack. I'm sorry. I'm all right.
Were you playing with the boys then? The volleyball scene, you've told me off air, is your favorite scene in Top Gun. No?
The volleyball. Yes. Yeah. Yes, and I used to oil up and watch that. Yeah.
I don't know if you need oil just to watch, but hey, you do you. All right, what do I have to say about Bruce? Here's what Bruce does. I was thinking about it. Here's what Bruce does. He makes this music, just the music part, that makes you feel things, but you don't know how you're feeling until he inserts the poetry. He's just really good at, I don't know. I use the word a romantic. It's not romance like relationships. Romantic is we're young. The future's unwritten. We're going to get out of this small town and we're going to make it big. And, you know, every song's, you know, about breaking away and just, I don't know.
Yeah.
He captures it really well. Now, I will say this. Bruce, you can have one of these two things. You can charge $500 for your nosebleed tickets, or you can sing about the working man, but you can't do both. Because if you sing about the working man when you charge $500, you'll have priced them out, and they're not going to be there to listen to it. Right. So it's not going to resonate with anybody there that can afford $500 bleeders.
The working man will not be attending the concert.
If I have one bone to pick with Bruce, that would be it. All right, everybody. We're going to close out. We're going to close out the Fran Tarkington years with the most painful loss in Mike's fandom history. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for bleeding with us. Enjoy some Bruce Springsteen.
The screen door slams. Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison sang.